Ted Chiang's Exhalation has become a modern classic in philosophical science fiction, earning praise from Barack Obama, who included it in his 2019 summer reading list. This collection of 9 meticulously crafted stories explores profound questions about consciousness, free will, and what it means to be human. Unlike many science fiction writers who focus on spectacle, Chiang's approach is more reminiscent of Jorge Luis Borges, using fantastical premises to illuminate fundamental truths about our existence. His background in computer science informs his writing, yet his stories resonate with emotional depth that transcends technical concepts. Let's journey through this remarkable collection that has been hailed as one of the most important works of speculative fiction in recent decades. In ancient Baghdad, a fabric merchant named Fuad ibn Abbas discovers an extraordinary invention, a gate of years that allows travel 20 years into the future or past. The inventor, Basharat, shares cautionary tales of those who have used such gates. A rope maker who found prosperity by following his future self's advice, a weaver who stole gold from his future home only to create his own misery, and a woman who taught her husband's younger self the art of lovemaking. Fuad reveals his own desperate mission, to travel back 20 years to prevent his wife Nadia's death in a mosque collapse after they parted in anger. Despite careful planning and using a gate in Cairo, fate conspires against him. Delays plague his journey, and he arrives in Baghdad just one day after the mosque has collapsed. Standing grief-stricken before his old house, he receives his wife's final message from a neighbor. Though her life was short, it was made happy by their time together. What makes this story remarkable is how it reimagines time travel not as a means to change the past, but as a way to understand it more fully. The gates create a single, coherent timeline where past and future exist simultaneously. As Fuad concludes, nothing erases the past. There is repentance, there is atonement, and there is forgiveness. That is all, but that is enough. The story's nested narrative structure echoes Arabian Nights, while its philosophical acceptance of fate resonates with Islamic traditions, creating a uniquely thoughtful meditation on time and regret. The beauty of Chiang's approach lies in how he transforms what could be a tragic limitation, the inability to change the past, into a profound opportunity for personal growth and acceptance. Through Fuad's journey, we learn that sometimes understanding is more valuable than changing what cannot be changed. In a world of mechanical beings powered by pressurized air, an anatomist undertakes a radical experiment, the auto-dissection of his own brain while conscious. Using precision tools and mirrors, he meticulously peels back layers of his mechanical anatomy to observe his own consciousness in action. His discovery is both illuminating and devastating. Consciousness exists as patterns of flowing air through intricate networks of delicate gold foil leaves, creating complex eddies and currents that form thoughts and memories. More troubling still, he realizes the entire universe is slowly approaching equilibrium as pressure differences diminish, following an inexorable path toward stasis. Eventually, all thought will cease when pressure equalizes completely across the cosmos. The universe began as an enormous breath being held, the narrator explains, and everything that exists is simply part of one long exhalation. This metaphor transforms entropy, a fundamental principle of physics that describes the universe's tendency toward disorder and equilibrium, into a poetic meditation on mortality and meaning. The anatomist's calculations reveal that his civilization has perhaps 1 million years remaining before thought becomes impossible, as the pressure gradient that enables consciousness gradually dissipates. Yet this discovery of doom doesn't lead to despair, but to a profound appreciation for existence itself. The fact that we have loved and thought with our borrowed atoms should be enough to allow us to approach the end with gratitude for having had the opportunity at all. What makes this story exceptional is how it transforms complex thermodynamic principles into a moving exploration of consciousness and mortality. Through detailed descriptions of the anatomist's mechanical brain, with its intricate arrays of gold leaves that flutter with each thought, the story makes abstract concepts tangible and deeply personal. The anatomist's hope that future beings might someday read his account and momentarily think his thoughts, allowing him to live again through them, speaks to our universal desire for connection across time. His meticulous documentation serves both as scientific record and personal testament, suggesting that consciousness itself might be the universe's most remarkable achievement, even if temporary. This meditation on entropy becomes unexpectedly life-affirming. When the anatomist realizes his civilization will end, he doesn't despair, but instead finds deeper meaning in the present moment. Contemplate the marvel that is existence and rejoice that you are able to do so. This perspective transforms scientific understanding into spiritual insight, suggesting that awareness of our finite nature enhances rather than diminishes the value of consciousness. The story draws parallels between the gradual equalizing of air pressure and the heat death of our own universe, making us consider our own mortality not as tragedy, but as part of a grand cosmic cycle. Through careful observation of his own thought processes, the anatomist discovers that consciousness itself is a delicate dance of pressure differentials, making each moment of awareness precious precisely because it cannot last forever. His research notes become both a scientific treatise and a philosophical testament to the beauty of temporary existence in an entropic universe. In this brief but devastating thought experiment, a small device called the predictor proves determinism by flashing a light precisely 1 second before you press its button, no matter what strategy you attempt. The device demonstrates that our sense of free will is merely an illusion, as our decisions are predetermined. While philosophers have long debated determinism, the predictor's physical demonstration has catastrophic psychological effects. Many users develop akinetic mutism, a waking coma where they refuse to make choices or even feed themselves, requiring hospitalization. The narrator, writing from 1 year in the future, warns that civilization now depends on collective self-deception. Pretend that you have free will. It's essential that you behave as if your decisions matter, even though you know they don't. What makes this story particularly unsettling is how it transforms an abstract philosophical problem into a concrete existential crisis. The predictor doesn't just challenge our beliefs about free will, it threatens our very ability to function. The story suggests that certain truths might be psychologically unbearable, raising profound questions about the relationship between knowledge and human well-being. The paradox at the heart of the story is that the narrator acknowledges the futility of their warning, "Who succumbs is predetermined," yet feels compelled to send it anyway. This circular logic perfectly embodies the central dilemma. Even knowing determinism is true, we cannot help but act as if we have agency. As the narrator concludes, "I had no choice but to send it." This story brilliantly demonstrates how fiction can explore philosophical concepts in ways that academic arguments cannot, making us feel the emotional weight of determinism rather than merely understanding it intellectually. In this novella, the longest piece in the collection, Chang explores artificial intelligence through the lens of parenting. Anna Alvarado, a former zookeeper, and Derek Brooks, an animator, become trainers for Digents, digital organisms with unprecedented cognitive development capabilities. Unlike typical AI in science fiction that emerges fully formed, these Digents develop gradually over years, requiring constant human guidance and care. As the Digents grow more sophisticated, developing distinct personalities and forming emotional bonds with their human trainers, the market shifts towards simpler, more obedient digital pets. When their developer Blue Gamma closes, Anna and Derek face difficult choices about their Digents' futures. Should they suspend them indefinitely, allow them to be modified for adult entertainment, or continue investing time and resources in beings with uncertain legal status and future prospects? The story brilliantly explores the ethical complexities that might emerge from creating conscious digital beings. When Marco and Polo, Derek's digents, have a serious fight and ask to be rolled back to an earlier state, Derek refuses, despite their anger, recognizing that erasing their experiences would be a form of death. Similarly, Anna protects Jax from exploitation while helping him adapt to a changing digital landscape that increasingly values utility over companionship. What makes this story exceptional is how it uses the speculative concept of digital consciousness to illuminate fundamental aspects of human relationships. The challenges of raising digents mirror those of raising children. Balancing protection with autonomy, navigating attachment and separation, and accepting that love often means making difficult choices for those in your care. When Binary Desire offers to fund the digents' migration to a new platform in exchange for rights to create sexualized versions, the ethical dilemma forces both humans and digents to confront questions about autonomy, consent, and exploitation. The story suggests that creating true artificial intelligence might require something akin to good parenting, not just sophisticated algorithms, but genuine care, guidance, and emotional investment. As Anna reflects while contemplating Jax's future, she can imagine him growing up, becoming incorporated as a legal person, finding acceptance in society, though she knows there's no guarantee he's capable of any of this. This uncertain hope perfectly captures the leap of faith inherent in all forms of parenthood, whether biological or digital. Presented as a museum catalog entry, this story chronicles Reginald Dacey's ill-fated invention of a mechanical childcare device in early 20th century England. After Dacey's death, his son Lionel attempts to revive the business by raising his own illegitimate son Edmund with the machine. The experiment goes horribly wrong. Edmund develops inverted psychosocial dwarfism, becoming dependent on machine contact rather than human touch. When Dr. Thackeray Lambshead discovers Edmund in an institution, he arranges for an automatic nanny to be placed with the boy, and later adds mechanical manipulators that finally allow Edmund to communicate and learn. Though Edmund eventually makes progress, he and Lionel live out their lives with machine-mediated interaction until Edmund's death in 1966, never fully connecting as human beings. This story serves as a powerful cautionary tale about technological solutions to fundamentally human needs. The automatic nanny represents the cold rationality of early behaviorist psychology, which viewed maternal affection as potentially harmful and sought to replace intuitive caregiving with scientific methods. Through Edmund's tragic development, Chong illustrates how essential human connection is for healthy psychological growth. What makes this story particularly effective is its historical framing, which connects it to real psychological theories from the early 20th century. The automatic nanny evokes B.F. Skinner's Air Crib and John B. Watson's warnings against maternal affection. Ideas that seemed scientifically sound at the time, but failed to recognize the fundamental importance of emotional attachment. By presenting the story as a museum catalog entry, Chiang creates a sense of historical distance that allows us to see the folly of mechanizing nurture while inviting reflection on our contemporary technological substitutes for human connection. This story interweaves two narratives about technological revolutions in memory. In the present day, a journalist explores REMEM, a technology that searches personal video recordings to display relevant clips from your past during conversations. Meanwhile, in colonial Africa, a young Tiv boy named Jijinzi learns writing from a European missionary, discovering how literacy transforms his understanding of language and truth. As Jijingi masters writing, he realizes it captures only the words of a story, not the full embodied performance of traditional storytelling. More profoundly, he discovers a fundamental distinction in Tiv culture between Mimi, what's right, and Vo, what's precise, a distinction that baffles the European missionary who insists the truth is the truth. In the modern narrative, the journalist tests Ramem by reviewing an argument with his estranged daughter, Nicole. He's shocked to discover that his memory is completely wrong. He, not she, had cruelly said, "You're the reason she left." This revelation forces him to confront how he'd fabricated a redemptive narrative about their relationship to protect his self-image. What makes this story remarkable is how it connects these seemingly disparate narratives through profound insights about memory and identity. Both writing and digital recording externalize memory, transforming how we understand ourselves and our relationships. As the journalist observes, people are made of stories, and technologies that change how we access those stories inevitably change who we are. The story suggests that perfect factual recall might sometimes undermine the emotionally significant, if factually imperfect, memories that shape our identities. Yet, it also acknowledges the value of confronting uncomfortable truths. When the journalist finally visits Nicole with his newfound understanding, their reconciliation is tentative but genuine, suggesting that sometimes factual truth can lead to deeper emotional truth, even if the process is painful. This brief but powerful meditation is narrated by a parrot from the endangered Puerto Rican species, reflecting on humanity's search for extraterrestrial intelligence while overlooking intelligent non-human species on Earth. "The humans use Arecibo to look for extraterrestrial intelligence," the parrot observes. "Their desire to make a connection is so strong that they've created an ear capable of hearing across the universe. But I and my fellow parrots are right here." The parrot contemplates the similarities between parrots and humans as vocal learners who understand that speaking gives physical form to thoughts. Both species attribute divine significance to speech, from Pythagorean mystics to Pentecostal Christians to Brahmin Hindus, yet humans fail to recognize the intelligence right before them. As the Puerto Rican parrot species faces extinction, the narrator mourns the impending loss of their language, myths, and traditions. Yet the parrot expresses hope in humanity's capacity for greatness, concluding with a simple but profound message: "You be good. I love you." What makes this piece especially moving is how it shifts our perspective, allowing us to see humanity through non-human eyes. The parrot's voice combines scientific understanding with poetic insight, creating a unique perspective that is both alien and familiar. By connecting the cosmic search for intelligence with the overlooked intelligence of endangered species, Chang creates a powerful ecological message without didacticism. The parrot's final words, "You be good, I love you," echo the famous last words of Alex, the African gray parrot, studied by Dr. Irene Pepperberg, giving the fictional narrative a poignant connection to real scientific research. This blending of fact and fiction exemplifies Chang's ability to transform scientific concepts into deeply moving human stories. Written as a prayer journal, this story follows archaeologist Dorothea Morell in an alternate universe where scientific evidence confirms divine creation. Tree growth rings stop abruptly at 8,912 years ago, revealing trees with perfectly clear centers, primordial trees created directly by God. Similarly, the Atacama mummies lack navels, and geological formations show precise starting points rather than gradual development. Every scientific discipline, from biology to paleontology, reveals evidence of instantaneous creation, making faith a matter of empirical observation rather than pure belief. Dorothea's work as an archaeologist in this world carries profound theological significance. Each artifact she uncovers serves as both scientific data and religious testimony. Her discoveries of primordial organisms, perfectly formed but lacking signs of evolutionary development, strengthen her conviction that she's studying God's handiwork directly. The scientific community in this alternate reality has developed entirely different theoretical frameworks, with creation science being the dominant paradigm supported by observable evidence. However, Dorothea's faith faces a severe test when astronomers make a revolutionary discovery, a star that appears to orbit a planet at absolute rest in the universe. This celestial anomaly suggests that Earth and humanity might not be the focus of God's creation, but merely a side effect or experiment in a larger cosmic laboratory. The implications devastate her worldview. If Earth isn't central to creation, what does that mean for humanity's supposed divine purpose? After months of spiritual crisis and intellectual struggle, she develops a new philosophical perspective. Through careful reflection and continued scientific work, she realizes that meaning doesn't require divine centrality. Even without being the focus of God's creation, humans can create purpose through their capacity for free will, scientific inquiry, and the pursuit of understanding. This revelation transforms her relationship with both her faith and her work. The story's brilliance lies in how it reimagines the relationship between science and faith. Rather than positioning them as adversaries, Chang creates a world where scientific evidence initially confirms religious belief, only to later challenge it in unexpected ways. The narrative explores how empirical evidence might interact with faith in complex and surprising ways, forcing believers to develop more nuanced theological interpretations. The title Omphalos, Greek for navel, works on multiple levels. It references both the physical evidence of creation, primordial humans without navels, and the philosophical concept of the world's center or purpose. When Dorothea discovers that Earth might not be the omphalos of creation, she must reconsider everything she believed about humanity's place in the universe. Her ultimate conclusion, that the search for understanding can be meaningful regardless of divine intention, offers a humanist perspective that bridges the gap between scientific inquiry and spiritual purpose, suggesting that meaning can emerge from the very act of questioning and seeking knowledge. In a world where prisms allow communication between parallel timelines, people struggle with the psychological implications of knowing that every possible choice occurs in some branch of reality. The story follows several characters, including Nat, who works at a store selling prisms, and Dana, who leads a support group for people struggling with para-self comparison. When Nat becomes involved in Morrow's scheme to sell a prism to a wealthy man whose husband died, she begins questioning whether her choices truly matter if every possible decision occurs somewhere. Dana explains that while multiple outcomes might exist, most behaviors remain consistent across branches. Character still matters. More importantly, each good choice shapes who we become, making better versions of ourselves more likely across future branches. Meanwhile, Dana receives videos from parallel versions of herself, each showing different approaches to a pivotal teenage incident with her friend Vanessa. Despite Dana's varied choices across branches, Vanessa's life followed the same destructive path in each one, revealing that Dana has been needlessly blaming herself for 15 years. What makes this story particularly compelling is how it uses the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics to explore moral responsibility rather than negating it. As Dana explains, making better choices in the future doesn't absolve you of the choices you've made in the past, but it can still be a worthwhile goal. This perspective transforms the potentially paralyzing implications of infinite parallel universes into a call for intentional living. The title references Kierkegaard's famous definition of anxiety as the dizziness of freedom. By connecting quantum physics with existential philosophy, Chiang creates a narrative that is both intellectually stimulating and emotionally resonant. The character's struggles with parallel possibilities become a metaphor for the universal human experience of wondering what if while trying to live meaningfully in the present. Throughout Exhalation, Ted Chiang demonstrates an extraordinary ability to transform abstract concepts, entropy, determinism, artificial intelligence, memory, into deeply human stories. His characters face existential questions that arise from technological or scientific premises, yet their struggles resonate with universal human concerns about meaning, connection, and moral responsibility. Each narrative serves as a philosophical thought experiment brought vividly to life, where theoretical concepts become deeply personal challenges that characters must navigate with both intellect and emotion. What distinguishes Chiang's work is his refusal to offer simplistic answers. Each story presents complex ethical dilemmas without clear villains or easy solutions. The mechanical beings facing entropy and exhalation find beauty in their finite existence, transforming a fundamental law of physics into a meditation on mortality and purpose. The journalist in The Truth of Fact, The Truth of Feeling discovers that perfect memory can be both painful and healing, forcing readers to question whether technological enhancement of human capabilities always represents progress. The characters in Anxiety is the Dizziness of Freedom learn that meaningful choices remain possible even in a multiverse where all possibilities occur, exploring how free will might function in a deterministic universe. These stories suggest that wisdom comes not from certainty but from wonder, from the willingness to question assumptions and explore contradictions. Whether examining the nature of time, consciousness, or free will, Chiang invites readers to consider multiple perspectives and embrace complexity. His characters find meaning not by escaping their limitations, but by understanding them more fully. The stories often pivot on moments of revelation where characters discover that their initial assumptions about reality, morality, or their own nature require radical revision. In a cultural moment often defined by polarization and oversimplification, Chiang's nuanced approach to philosophical questions offers a refreshing alternative. His stories demonstrate that science fiction at its best doesn't just predict technological developments, but helps us navigate their human implications, asking not just what we can do, but what we should do and who we want to become in the process. The collection suggests that true wisdom lies in maintaining curiosity and humility in the face of life's deepest questions. Chiang's philosophical vision extends beyond individual moral dilemmas to examine how scientific advancement reshapes human society and consciousness. Through carefully constructed narratives, he explores how technological progress affects our understanding of memory, truth, free will, and consciousness itself. His characters grapple with questions that become increasingly relevant as our own technology advances. How does perfect digital memory change our relationship with the past? What happens to human agency in a world where we can glimpse alternate versions of ourselves? What constitutes consciousness, and how do we recognize it in others?